If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. Star Trek podcast by two guys who were a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, so they're easing the pain with some alcoholic beverages this time around. I'm Adam Pranica.
My therapist says never to do this. I'm Ben Harrison.
You know, my lovely wife, lovely and smart and all of the good adjectives, recently made a deal with herself. She's like, I don't want to drink anymore on weekdays.
Yeah.
She's like, that's something that we can stick to. That's a noble and good thing. Let's save the drinking for weekends where it belongs. Non-school nights, she says. And this was a deal that I said to her face was something that I couldn't join her in. Because I have a job, Ben, and that job is pod primarily now.
But honey, it's for work.
And here I am, ready to clock in with you with a highball glass full of bourbon.
All right, buddy, let's clock in.
What are you drinking today?
I'm drinking a Golden State Bay Brett Cider.
This there you
is
go.
A hard cider made out of apples.
I've been drinking a lot of cider lately. I've been trying to go gluten-free.
It's a nice thing to drink. And I found in New York that I had a hard time finding a cider that didn't taste like extra sweetened apple soda with booze.
Yeah, that's real tough. A too sweet cider seems like the standard, and that is no good.
Yeah. Yeah, don't need it. And I fortunately have had pretty good luck. I don't know the brands out here on the West Coast as well, but I've been finding that my hit rate of trying one and liking it has been pretty high, and it's because of all that dryness in it.
Nothing more disappointing than going up to a bar and the only cider they have is sweet.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that.
Yeah. Take that woodchuck and flush it. I went to a cidreria in the Basque country of Spain several years ago, and the cider was quite dry.
I bet. But it was.
Petriteggi. If you ever see it, try it out. I enjoyed it.
Got the Benjamin R. Harrison seal of approval.
Yeah, they put that on all the literature.
The sticker on the bottle says, I tried it, Benjamin R. Harrison.
It was a funny scene because it's kind of like a, they've got kind of like a steakhouse type of vibe where you go in and like you basically pay them $25 a person and they just bring out like some salad and some steak and a glass, and then like as you like you can go back into the room full of like, you know, 50,000 gallon barrels of cider, and just an employee will be around like tapping a different barrel from time to time. And the way they, like, it is such an abundant resource there that when they tap it, it is just like spraying across the room, like a stream of piss. And you just hold out your glass to catch a bunch of it. But like a lot of it is just going on the floor.
Is anyone there just like with an open mouth? trying to catch it like that?
I thought about it. I was kind of stranger in a strange land, and like it was mostly locals. And like there was definitely a point where I was like drunk enough that I didn't realize it was my turn to stick my glass into the stream, and everybody was looking at me like, "What the fuck are you doing? You're wasting so much cider."
When you're stranger in a strange land, there's two things you don't want to do, Ben. Number one, you don't want to just watch the stream and not stick your glass in front of it. Number two is you don't want to close your eyes, open your mouth, and put your face in front of that stream.
Right. Yeah, there's etiquette to be followed, you know? You got to wait to do that until you see somebody else demonstrating that that's okay. Adam, we're here because we have our new board game mechanic in full effect.
That's right.
People are going to gach.biz/game. Is that what we said?
Yeah. People are really loving the idea of this game, Ben, and that's encouraging because we surely didn't want to ruin the show.
No. Come on.
Who would ever accuse us of that?
I think this is going to be good. I'm excited that we are here in season 2 of Der Spursnern.
It'll be interesting to see what, if any, differences we will discover in season 2, episode 1, The Homecoming.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Ben, this first scene occurs in Quark's bar.
A familiar opening to a Deep Space Nine episode at this
point.
Yeah,
nothing surprising here, but maybe the only surprise I saw was Quark's giant belt buckle and that he sort of dressed like a carpet store Santa. Like, he's more rotund and jolly here than I remember in season one.
And that's how I found out there was no Santa Claus.
Well, Deep Space Nine has been good for Quark.
He's in great spirits. He's in great spirits because he did Odo a solid.
I figured we'd been at each other's throats long enough. It's time we called a truce.
Truce.
Having watched The Wire, I feel like I don't quite buy that Odo isn't wise to what Quark is doing. You know, sometimes a criminal will turn in another criminal to like open the market up for himself, right?
Right.
But Odo, having gotten a hot and actionable tip from Quark, like he made arrests based on this tip, is totally perplexed as to why Quark would help him out with some information like this.
In a post-currency society, for some people, not Quark, but some people.
Right.
Information's the true currency, right?
Yeah.
And that's what he's throwing around. You know, Odo is not going to take a bribe, but he will. He'll take a pocket full of that sweet, sweet information.
So the angle winds up not being that Quark is trying to free up space in the black market so much as he's just trying to confuse Odo.
You're up to something.
Why would you say that?
Because you're always up to something.
Which I like. Like
one of the rules of acquisition is like, get your opposition off guard by declaring peace.
It confuses the hell out of your enemies.
I love Rom in this whole sequence because the initial conversation between Odo and Quark is framed with Rom like clearly listening in the background while pretending to polish the bar.
Yeah, he's basically doing everything except like sticking his head into frame from the top.
Yeah. This is definitely like the series indicating like this Rom guy is going to be more of a character now.
And he's also like helping us get a little exposition because he's like, Quark, why the hell did you do that? Quark basically turns to camera and tells us why.
So we open with this like very tactical Quark situation where Quark is making, like, you know, he's making galaxy brain moves, you know? he's that meme where the mind has encompassed the entire galaxy.
I want to see the galaxy brain meme redone with the Ferengi head.
But then, like, the next thing he does seems so un-Quark because it's like, I mean, maybe it's kind of Quark, but the lady he's dealing with, you would think, kind of works the same way.
Right.
And she really doesn't. Like, she's got this earring.
A Kardashian gave you a Bajoran earring?
He asked me to take it to Bajor. Said whoever I showed it to would understand.
There doesn't seem to be a financial angle there. No terms are discussed. He just takes it off her hand. So it's like, what is Quark just doing favors now?
In a mixed station universe, like, it sort of feels like airport rules would be in play, right? You don't want to hold onto someone's, some stranger's bag. Just like, I wouldn't expect Quark to want to hold on to this earring, not knowing its provenance, right? Like, purple-haired catsuit lady seems to be doing that grift that all attractive women seem to be able to do to Ferengi, which is, like, sort of seduce them into doing their bidding.
Right. Or just be, like, a guy on a street with a fucking watch that he claims is a real Rolly, you know?
Yeah, that's maybe a better description of the scene, because he doesn't ever assume that, it's going to get him into trouble.
We need Quark to, like, take a pit stop at the Antiques Roadshow and get, like, an insurance valuation on this thing.
I would insure it for at least $1 million.
You know, like, for it to be plausible.
I feel like Garrick would be a great host for that version of the show on DS9.
In lieu of Mark L. Wahlberg?
Yeah, yeah. God, get Mark L. Wahlberg out of here.
Get Garrick in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she just gives him this earring saying, like, anybody Bajoran will know what to do with it is basically what she says, which is also confusing because she's on a Bajoran space station.
Like, yeah, kind of bully for her, right?
Yeah, like, if you don't want money for it and it's potential trouble, which is sort of implied here, drop it on the promenade and walk away, you know?
Yeah, the earring ends up being from Cardassia 4. That's said straight away. So already Quark's got to feel like this thing is hot.
And the person he takes it to is Major Kira. And he takes it to her on a kind of pervy basis of, like, entering her quarters.
As she's changing, and she's actually dressed in blowing up a pizza oven attire.
Right.
Yeah. Which may be my favorite costume for Nana Visitor so far.
Yeah, we have to assume that she came from blowing up a pizza oven, right. I guess.
That's all she likes to do in the Hollow Suites. It's like, pizza oven, level 47. Start program.
Yeah, she's like having a little meditation. Just reflecting on the pizza oven that she just blew up. And she turns around, and there's Quark, and he's like, hey, got a little something-something for you. And he doesn't even try and sell it to her.
As soon as we fade up in Kira's condo, I was thinking, oh, we haven't seen Kira's condo before on this show. And then as soon as I said that,
I always wondered what your quarters looked like.
And then, like, makes himself at home.
Surprisingly wharf-like apartment.
Yeah, pretty Spartan.
I don't know if that's because it's a Cardassian space station or because Kira is kind of a wharf-like character. She's the warrior of the show, you know?
Her rank should earn her one of the best condos, I think.
Yeah. It seems a lot smaller than the one we've seen Sisko in, right?
Right. It could really... it's clearly not an open concept apartment. Therefore, we don't get to see the entirety of it.
Yeah. Get the property brothers over here. We got to knock some walls down. This is not going to have good resale value. People are looking for that open concept.
Not great curb appeal from Bajor either.
So she takes the earring and storms out, and Quark is like, consider it a gift.
Yeah, and this is like, this adds more batter to the cake that is the idea of Quark being in love with Kira, like, throughout season one. There are implied affectionate moments from Quark to Kira that are unrequited. And so, like, the idea of Quark being okay, just giving up something of value to her, makes a little bit of sense to me, in a way that he would never let that fly for anyone else without wanting something in return.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
All he wants in return is her love, man.
Yeah, that's our cold open. And we come back from title sequence, and Jake is running into his dad on the promenade, and Jake is pretty pumped because he has just landed a first date. He asked a girl out.
Well, good for you.
And now you've come to the old man for advice on what to say to her.
And he wants his dad to consult with him on like what he should do with this girl. His ideas all sound too erotic for Commander Sisko.
But at the same time, they sound totally rational given what there is to do on this dumb station. Like, all there is to do is go to a holosuite or go to the apartment and watch TV.
Right.
What else are they going to do? And to both of these ideas, Ben Sisko is like, no way. You need a chaperone for things like that. And also, like, she's way too young to see fuck Bokai. And what you like doing to him in the holosuite.
Is Jake allowed in Quark's?
Yeah, because he hangs out with Nog there sometimes.
Yeah, like, I wonder, like, is Quark's like TGI Fridays where it's as much restaurant as bar?
Yeah, I feel like that's a fairly accurate thing. It doesn't seem like there's any other restaurant situation there.
Well, there's the Replimat, right? And I think, yeah, in later seasons, there's like a Klingon restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like the ethnic food of Deep Space Nine.
I'm sure that's really popular.
Delicious.
Yeah, you can smear all the all the fish roe you want on your turkey leg.
The Rokeg blood pie has been under the heat lamp for 13 hours.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that stuff.
You know what? I bet Klingon food safety rules mandate that all food must be in the danger zone, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, you let that mayonnaise sit out in the sun to test the metal of your warriorness. So yeah, Sisko's suggestions are like, do something in public with her. Wear a straitjacket.
Do a ride-along with Odo. Ben, it made me think of presupposing that you ever knew what you were doing. What were some of the first date ideas that you had when you were first dating? I remember not really having a lot of great ideas myself, and they mostly involved just like renting a movie or hanging out at the mall.
Yeah, I have a distinct memory of like that middle school moment where you like ask a girl out, and that is like a meaningless gesture in middle school because it's like you can't like go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah.
With anybody. You don't have a car. Like, you're definitely not going to, like, ask your parents to take you on a date.
It's so dumb.
And it, you know, it was that classic, like, we would pass each other in the hall and be more awkward with each other than before I had asked her out kind of a deal.
At least you had the ask her out part down, Ben. I feel like what I did primarily was like not give the thing a name and hang out for a while until she got bored.
Well, it backfired big time because I went home and said, like much like Jake here, I said to my mom, hey, I asked a girl from my school out. And she said, well, I don't know about that. I'm going to have to call some of the other mothers and see if they're allowing their children to date.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You got mom blocked. That's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, I didn't
you
learn
wanna
it then.
You want to learn that lesson as soon as possible, too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But yeah, that was like a a moment of like, no. Don't call anybody. I said that to get a rise out of you. It was not true. Silly me. Always making jokes.
My mom was friends with our school's counselor, and I asked a girl to homecoming when I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school, and my mom, unbeknownst to me, had asked the guidance counselor what the story was with this girl.
Ooh.
And found out from the counselor that that she was not a good person for me to be dating. My mom she did not ban me from going out with her, but voiced her displeasure based on the sleuthing that she did.
Wow.
About this girl. And talk about breeding mistrust.
Yeah.
That was not a good moment. You can't do OPSEC on girls, Ben.
No, that's going to backfire as a parent because... You put together a few incidents like that as a parent, and your kid is just never going to tell you anything ever again.
And guess what happened, Ben?
So they're having this conversation where Sisko is counseling Jake to walk around in public with this girl, which, you know, the cheapest date possible. So not terrible advice, but
you can get some of those big lollipops.
Yeah. With the nice flared base. She'll love that. Kira comes up and is like trying to get Sisko's attention, and he's really not reading her for like how urgent this seems to be. He's like, yeah, well, whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about over lunch, and starts like ordering coffee. You know, gets that like that super 90s commuter mug of coffee and orders some food, and she's like,
I need to borrow a runabout.
And he starts prying. He's curious why she wants to take Daddy's car.
You really don't want to ask me that.
Much like Jake asking his dad, you know, to take a date to the Holosuite, Kira's asking for the keys to the car, right? This is very paternal behavior happening from Ben Sisko to other people on the station.
Yeah. He's not exactly leaping at the opportunity to do his first officer a favor. And so he starts kind of prying stuff out of her, and it turns out that it's about this earring. This is an earring with the crest of a hero of the Bajoran Resistance.
Lee Nallis.
The Resistance leader?
The greatest we ever had.
Lee Nallis? The Lee Nallis?
Holy shit. That's Lee Nallis's earring. That's the reverence that people treat both the earring and the name when it's spoken.
Yeah.
Everyone's heard that Gulls of Rail story.
Yeah.
I have already heard the story. Wasn't he reported killed in action?
I wish I knew the, like, relative strengths of Bajorans and Cardassians. Are Bajorans, like, physically weaker than Cardassians the way humans are physically weaker than Vulcans?
It seems that way, and if that's the case, then Ferengi is definitely at the bottom, because we saw Kira throw Quark across his own bar not too long ago.
We do have the operating theory that Ferengi are very light. They have bird bones.
Sure, sure. I'm willing to co-sign that theory.
Kira wants to go on a Rambo First Blood Part 2 hostage rescue mission.
To Cardassia 4 to rescue a Bajoran prisoner of war.
And she wants a runabout to do it.
She's only supposed to take pictures.
Just photographs. Under no circumstances are you to engage the enemy.
Kira, Major. Half German, half Indian.
It's a hell of a combination.
The other thing that we probably should talk about is that they find some graffiti in the hallway. And this is graffiti that is associated with the Bajoran terrorist-ish organization called The Circle.
They're an extremist faction who believe in Bajor for the Bajorans.
And meet tri-annually at a secret country mansion in Colorado known as The Meadows.
I don't know about you, Ben, but when my graffitos are scrawled in yellow paint, I feel like that's especially threatening.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Is this Star Trek's first graffito?
I feel like the Klingons are known for their graffitos, right?
Oh, yeah. They tagged up that space station on Discovery, didn't they?
Yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah. And they got that poopy on that one ship.
Yeah. You want to avoid that if possible.
That was not intentional graffiti. They bombed that one starship where they tagged it up and it said, all you see is, and then on the other starship it said, crime in the city.
You have any more before we move on?
I don't know. We'll probably just have to edit in some wild style drops.
Yeah. I love how we basically, we cut to her quarters. And, like, it's her getting ready, except it's almost, again, like using the date analogy, like it's her getting ready for a date.
Yeah.
Kira's packing a small bag, but Sisko doesn't want her to go alone, which is why he's brought O'Brien to be the wheelman.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Every crime needs a good wheelman, and Kira's a great driver, but... this O'Brien guy drives like he doesn't care if he lives or dies.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't.
He's kind of a baby driver, if you will.
Sure.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get back to his family, even though he has one.
That's the funniest part of, like, when Kira and O'Brien board the runabout and get ready to go, Kira's like, look.
This mission can end only one of two ways. Either we bring back Lee Nihlis, or we don't come back at all.
And O'Brien looks at her like, so can I just choose the second one?
She's like, what I'm trying to tell you, O'Brien, is we're expendable. And he's like, does that mean your family wants you to come home for dinner, but if you don't show up?
Doesn't really matter.
O'Brien's like, you take me to Cardassia 4? You take me with you so we can start a new life?
Live the quiet life?
Yeah.
O'Brien coming into this operation made me realize something that I hadn't even thought of in the entire first season of Deep Space Nine is, who hates the Cardassians more, Kira or O'Brien?
He totally Cardassia-splains Kira in the apartment before they go. He's like,
I've seen how the Cardassians treat their prisoners.
Like, Kira hasn't liberated camp after camp full of these atrocities. Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, that line, again, was meant for us. That wasn't meant for anyone in the room.
Right. And what they should have done is something like Alice Waters going to that farmer's market in New York, where she says, like, this is a prison camp, and he goes, I've seen how Cardassians treat their prisoners. It's bad. And she goes, yeah, I know. I know all about it, asshole.
Here's the thing, though. They give O'Brien this throwaway line about how he knows this stuff, but when they get to the planet, they don't allow him to, like, have that memory visited upon him. Like, he has totally squished those feelings, and he's a total pro on the planet surface. And I was hoping for a little bit more unhinged O'Brien in this moment.
Oh, like getting, like having a PTSD kind of moment?
Well, not even that, but like have him really relish the idea of shooting Cardassians down there while on the clock. Like, this is something he doesn't get to do normally.
Yeah, and it's not that he hates the Cardassians, it's that he hates what they made him become.
Survive a war, you gotta become war.
So,
let us never forget.
Yeah, he really does keep his cool. They approach the camp just on foot. Like, there's a little, like, fun and games with talking to the radio substation that's tracking their progress across Cardassian space. They've tricked out their warp signature to look like something else, and they decide to put down on Cardassia 4. Evidently not the seat of the Cardassian Empire, because it's just, this planet is just a heap of rubble.
They're going to need all these rocks broken, Ben. that's what these guys are there to do.
This is definitely like the Rambo camp, right?
When they beam down, this is a real outdoor set. I was totally blown away. This is real sunshine.
Yeah, it's real sunshine. There's like late season 6 TNG level depth of shots where you can see like more than 100 yards in the distance.
You have an action set piece where like people are falling down hills and shooting beam weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a lot of fun. Their opening gambit is Kira is a Bajoran prostitute that is for some reason here, and O'Brien is her pimp. The Cardassian guard should have just been like, nah, 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 nah.
What would it cost me for an appointment?
More than you could afford.
Yeah, the unbelievable part is O'Brien as a pimp.
Yeah, like, O'Brien as a pimp, 0 cents.
Kira could be anyone. Like, she is a chameleon. Like, she's almost too excited to be playing this part, I think.
Yeah. The prisoners here doing the hard labor are noticing this scene going down.
What's this all about? I'm not quite sure.
They've all like pretty much noticed, so they're like ready for it when the drop happens.
Yeah.
Kira starts like, you know, punching and knocking out the guard. She turns off the perimeter fence. She and O'Brien start pegging the other Cardassians that are walking around. And they get everybody to escape. It's a real desperate escape attempt. It's more Rambo 2, like, you know, we are barely making it out alive with you guys kind of shit.
From a technical perspective, this scene blows away so much of season one. There's so much happening here.
It's more exciting shot compositions than you normally get in Trek. Like,
right.
Even in TNG, when they had outdoor stuff, you know, it would just be Dr. Crusher and Picard walking around in the wilderness. This is right. like 30 people running toward camera, and they're like firing lasers back at the Cardassians, who are, you know, shooting beam weapons at them. Guys falling down hills, rocks exploding. It's pretty wild.
Do you think that the Cardassians are just bad shots? Or is it, on a fundamental level, a pulse weapon is less accurate than a beam weapon because a beam weapon is its own tracer?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wondered about the way O'Brien used his beam weapon, because he would like aim a shot and then click the button and it would miss. But he's never like what I would be doing if I had a phaser is just like waving it all over the place at the people,
right.
You know,
like using it as a cutting torch.
Yeah, but maybe if you like move it around too much, it could like melt in your hand or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we need some phaser backstory here.
Like have him toss it to like one of the Bajorans and say like don't wave it around too much, it'll blow up in your hand. I don't even know what accent that was, man. That was bad. They make this weird decision in this moment. They're like, they're getting out with a dozen prisoners, and they're like we're not going to escape these four remaining Cardassian guards. And one of the prisoners is like, I'll stay back with four guys, and we'll fight them off if you give us your phasers. You get this dude out alive, because if Lee Nalis survives, like, it's a big deal. Everybody, not those four guys, gets on the runabout, and they're like waiting, and they're like, oh man, like we're gonna take off, like, once those guys get back here. And Lee Nalis is like, don't take off without those guys, man. Don't take off without those guys. And the major has to make this like horrible decision, like, we're gonna have to leave them behind. They're gonna have to be sacrificial lambs.
When Kira makes this decision, it feels like a professional making a tough choice in a hard spot. But the aftermath of that decision is never talked about, and it's barely even reacted to in the moment. Did you think that was weird?
I thought it was weird. I think it's like a little bit building up to the reveal about Lee Nalis later, but
yeah.
I was also just like, so fucking take off and beam those guys up, right? Like, how many times in Trek have we seen somebody in a hairy situation get beamed out of it? What's preventing that?
O'Brien's like counting down the time it takes for these two giant Cardassian warships to enter orbit, and they're just waiting. And like, the pregnancy of them waiting seems so nonsensical to me.
Yeah. Kira turns to O'Brien. She's like, hey, do you know how to use a transporter beam? And he's like, duh.
Does my answer mean whether or not we'll be staying or going back home to Deep Space Nine, where my wife is?
What are you doing now?
Let's talk a little bit about this Lee Nalis guy. He's got that sort of leathery, sun-soaked ruggedness to him.
He does.
Sort of an ersatz Hasselhoff type that you'd find on like your late 80s action television show, like Airwolf pilot guy or like Baywatch Knights antagonist.
Yeah.
Like he looks sort of anonymously good-looking.
And anonymously 90s hair. Like,
yeah.
It's like, it's not 90s hair that calls attention to itself the way Ginger Jesus would.
He looks like the bartender in a resort town. You know?
Yeah,
like good looking for there.
You do enough shots with him and he tells you like he used to be an investment banker, but he just fucking couldn't take the stress.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Lee Nalis, all right.
He's living the dream.
And like, for a moment, you think about whether or not you could live that life too.
Yeah. like Lee Nellis is like he's beach bar chic.
You want to be living that Lee Nellis lifestyle. You go to a hotel conference room, you take his class, the Lee Nellis lifestyle.
Right. It becomes evident that it's just a timeshare pitch about halfway through. Oh man, I knew that there was some reason they were giving away blenders. Lee Nellis took a little fire on the way out, so like when they get back to the station, he's got to go to Six Bay. And it's like everybody that comes off of this thing has to go to Six Bay, but he's in a bad enough way that they get him to the station, like make him go through the airlock, and then they beam him from the hallway to Six Bay.
Ben, when you only have a single camera, what you need are your actors facing the same direction, which is why it's so convenient that Lee Nellis's injury was on his back. So he could lay on his stomach and talk to Dr. Bashir while they're both facing camera.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he didn't take a bath or like get cleaned up at all while he's getting treated. Like, I guess whatever he's getting treated for is that bad that they like don't have time to like clean the filth off of him.
They didn't want to show the delousing scene when they brought him on board. What do you think are the bugs that are on him from Cardassia 4?
Yeah.
Probably really gross.
Kira runs into Sisko's office to like tell him how the op went and is very embarrassed to find that Sisko is FaceTiming with Gul Dukat.
Yeah, you get a knock first before going into Sisko's office for a variety of reasons, Ben. One of them being that he may be FaceTiming with Dukat. Yeah. And that might be something that enters into the vernacular as another way to say whacking it, right?
Right, FaceTiming with Dukat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that like Dukat is tipping Sisko? He's like, Sisko is like camming for Dukat.
Yeah, just as a way to earn some extra money. Yeah. Sure, I could see that.
Yeah.
But it ends up being one of those tension and release moments pretty fast because Kira's not comfortable being there, but it's quickly disclosed that Dukat is all about apologizing for the idea that these Bajorans were in this camp because they weren't supposed to be there because of some treaty. And so he boxed up the rest of the Bajorans, sent them back to Deep Space Nine, and gave a humble apology for the situation even happening.
And I hope that our quick response to this unfortunate situation will prove once and for all that Cardassia is no longer your enemy.
We get a real tiny scene in this episode in Quark's bar after it closes, and it's Quark and Rom counting money and dividing them, dividing the bars of Latinum between themselves, and it is
one for you and six for me.
This is a situation that grows in irritation for Rom as the count continues because it's just so dispiriting.
Yeah,
to see all that Latinum go to the other side of the table.
Well, he should have negotiated for a better percentage in the LLC when they founded Quark Rom Co. LLC.
Yeah, which rule of acquisition is it that makes 6-to-1 fair on the split?
It makes it seem like Rom has a piece of the bar, right? He owns 1/7 of the bar.
Yeah, yeah. So Rom slinks away in a huff, and from stage right enters the Jabberwockies, who hold Quark down and brand him.
Yeah,
on the forehead.
They have like the branding iron of the future.
I don't know which is more troubling: the idea that Quark's bar has such poor security when money's on the table, or that the Jabberwockies are still a thing,
right,
in the 24th century.
Yeah, like you would think that winning dance crew contests would only have so much shelf life, but it seems like it's like the Blue Man Group. Like, they've been able to build an empire out of it.
I'm shocked by this.
they get Quark to Six Bay, and I guess Bashir is not just a good doctor, but he's a good Dr. Tadoff as well.
Yeah, often the more painful procedure is the removal and not the installation of either your brand or your tattoo.
Yeah. I got to say, Quark is lucky that they did this on his forehead and not on his ear.
Yeah.
Because that could have, like, really dulled his sexual his sexual sensations, you know? And that would be really horrible.
Yeah, a few people brand the tip. And then for good reason.
Yeah. I think it's about this time that a Bajoran government politician shows up, played by Frank Langella.
Well, Ben, it may surprise and disappoint you to know that I was so shocked by Frank Langella's presence here that I did a little research.
Oh, man, that's not how the board game works.
I know, dude. I know, but it's Frank Langella. He deserves a little research.
Sure.
Would you like to hear what I found?
Lay it on me, brother.
He did this role uncredited.
Wow.
Which is why you won't see his name in the credits. He did it because he, at this moment in his career, did a lot of stuff for his kids' sake. He knew his kids would enjoy him being on Star Trek, so that's why he did it.
Wow.
It was the same reason that he played Skeletor in the Masters of the Universe film, which is a part that he played wearing a skull mask, Ben.
Yeah.
You may know this skull mask as the same skull mask that is worn on that one weird skull head-looking dude in the Klingon calisthenics program that Worf uses on the holodeck. It's the same mask, Ben.
Damn.
Do you see how I connected those dots?
Holy shit.
Thumbtacks and red string, man.
I happen to know that you record this podcast from your basement, and I'm just picturing the, you know, the corkboard, the wall that has several lined-up milk bottles full of piss, the crazy scribblings on blank surfaces of wall that you use to arrive at this.
Ben, those milk bottles predate my investigation. Frank Langella also was in a long-term relationship with Whoopi Goldberg.
No shit.
Yeah, he was her steadman for a long time.
Damn. RSVP Frank Langella.
Oh no, he's dead?
Didn't he die?
It's hilarious that was the one bit of research I didn't do. No, he's not dead. He's 80 years old.
Damn it. I mean, yay.
Boy, we just went through a lot of emotions just then. Speaking of emotional, Jake is on his fainting couch, sad that the Bajoran girl would not go out with him.
Yeah.
Because of his humanity.
Yeah, it turns out that the circle, you know, most well known via their dance crew, the Jabberwockies, are putting out a xenophobic ideology among Bajorans that Bajor is for the Bajorans and we shouldn't allow all these aliens to interlope. It's very much the Vedic win idea. It cropped up a lot in season one and is now like encoded in the ideology of the circle.
I don't understand why Bajor is so nationalist about this stuff. Like, they've got factions on their planet worshiping cum monsters. Like, clean your own house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get that shit figured out first.
Like, it makes a little bit more sense for the Vulcans to be this racist, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we don't really let anybody not Vulcan into our science academy or our expeditionary force because we've figured everything out.
Yeah, there's like an intelligent strictness to it that you can sort of understand.
Yeah. There's nobody living on a moon in orbit of Vulcan that's like, hey, I'm not leaving here. I just finished my pizza oven.
What kind of oven was that, Ben?
My pizza oven.
He's thinking of lasagna.
I'm into my third beer, Adam. Leave me alone.
Things got slippery pretty fast.
I'm trying to give the people what they signed up for.
I give you a Frank Langella story, and you start drinking like the man's dead.
Yeah, man. I'm holding an Irish wake for a man that's still alive over here.
After the podcast is over, I'll be holding an Irish wank.
I'm probably like a quarter Irish, you know. as far as I know.
I've seen that mustache. I'm ready to believe that. So this is the part of the episode that sort of pays off the idea of Lee Nallis, guy who's not comfortable with his fame. We get a couple of scenes where groups of Bajorans are following him around the station, like wanting a speech. He finally gives that speech when Frank Langella beams up. And every moment after this is just filled with this sort of dread about Lee Nallis. He understands that Kira took him back home to erect him as a leader, but he doesn't really want to be given speeches, and he doesn't want to be given the responsibility of being this great new leader because his origin story is flawed.
It's the thing that was animating him not wanting to leave Cardassia 4 without those dudes. Like, he didn't want them to sacrifice themselves for him.
And this begins a debate about, you know, the difference between a person and a symbol. It's the Kalis question all over again, right? Like, the truth of Gul Zarael's legend is fairly far off from what the legend is. Like, everyone thinks Lee Nallis killed a 10-foot-tall Cardassian with his bare hands, and he's this hero figure that is worthy of worship. And Lee finally levels with Ben Sisko, and he's like, look, man, this guy was naked and small.
He was hanging dong, just chilling in a lake.
Yeah, Gul Zarael, like, should be ashamed to die in that manner, because I was a little bit embarrassed about the whole scene, but, like, the people needed a story, right? And so they latched onto it, and they telephoned it into this legend.
Yeah, his legend really got out of control, and it's not something he likes or wants. He doesn't want to be a legend. He doesn't want to be a symbol of hope for anybody. And Sisko's like,
they still need you.
This is something that fate has visited upon you, and it might not be comfortable, but you're in a very unique position to unite your people, because Bajor is fucking falling apart. Like, people are fighting down there. Like, the Kai is dead or gone or whatever.
She's on Planet The Room. I am not dead. I am not.
Adam is excited to quote The Room because he just saw it for the first time.
Feels good. Now I can tell those jokes.
I like how you and I are doing a podcast right now and also sending jokes to each other via text that aren't on the podcast.
We're really playing three-dimensional podcast chess here.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, when I edit this episode, I'm sure I will discover that we were far too drunk to be doing this.
You're also too drunk to realize that I will be the editor of this episode.
Oh, shit. Goldacott. Goldacott. So. The end of the episode is a pretty intense scene in Ops, where the minister shows up to announce that Lee Nallis has been given the title of Navark.
I don't know, man. If they're, like, making up a title for you, I might prefer it to sound a little less like something that needs to be lanced from your body.
Well, anyways, there's a series of shocking revelations here. Lee Nallis has been given a political title that is the first of its kind. It's a great honor, but he is also the new Kira.
He's been made the Bajoran liaison officer to Deep Space Nine.
They took her job.
Yeah, and she's been stationed back on Bajor.
Yeah. She can do a lot more damage to the myriad pizza ovens down there if she were to live there. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
She can lead the anti-pizza oven expeditionary force. Just...
You wouldn't believe the conditions I found them in. Filled with the soot of 1,000 pizzas. The ones they couldn't bake anymore. Buried in an open grave. Some of them were even used for gluten-free crust. Oh, it was awful.
One of them, it's hard to talk about, it was used for deep dish.
So this banger, this emotional banger, is dropped on Kira, and a to be continued banger is dropped on us. It's a first episode cliffhanger.
Yeah, and when you start the episode, there's no indication given that this is going to be one of a several, you know? Like, I think that is, like, in the context of this era of television, pretty outre. Like, the average TV viewer is not expecting big, fat arcs getting unfolded on them all the time. And Deep Space Nine kind of blazed this trail in a lot of ways. Like, I think, you know, X-Files was there for it too, but they don't give you any warning that this is going to be a cliffhanger at the beginning. And I don't even think that, like, the story structure gives you any warning for the first half, you know?
No, this was super surprising.
You kind of think that this is just going to be a quick little, like, Rambo story, and it winds up really not being.
Yeah, there are a lot of times when the credits can ruin it, and one of the ways that it does is when you get a part one in a title of episode.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you get a cast credit, sort of like what they did with Michelle Yeoh by making her an featuring credit.
Right.
Instead of a full bird cast member. Like, you know she's not long for the show if you get that credit. So good on them for not betraying any of that ahead of time. It really served the surprise for me.
Totally. It's a lot of fun. And looking at the titles as listed on Amazon, they have blown that surprise in listing them as The Homecoming Part 1, The Circle Part 2, and The Siege Part 3.
Did you like this episode?
I did. I think that this is an episode where I, like it's not really an episode that's there to be liked or not liked, because it is really setting the table. And I think that that's a really cool and interesting idea, like an episode that is entirely about putting pieces on the board. I guess I like it in that sense, like the sense that you sit down kind of expecting an arc, either like an entire half of an arc or an entire arc based on what we're used to so far. And it's not that. It's like this new thing. It's this new idea. Like, what if we kind of introduce a whole bunch of characters and a whole bunch of motivations and power structures and like volatile elements, and it almost feels like the first episode of a series, you know?
Yeah.
It's introducing so much. It's almost like hitting the reset button on the entire show. And from that standpoint, I think it's a really interesting exercise, and I am really excited to see what the next couple episodes have in store for us.
I might go a step further, Ben, and to say that if you removed the entire first season and made this the first episode of the series, I think it works.
Yeah.
I think it works without any backstory. There's enough restated here about Kira's Cardassian experience, about what the Cardassians are like, the relative guilt, the guilty feelings that some parties feel about their actions during it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it totally works as a pilot.
Yeah, standing alone. I mean, this may have been the smarter entry point to the Deep Space Nine story.
Yeah, if I didn't say it before, I'll say it now. I like the episode for the same reason that you did. And I hope this means that better things are ahead for the show as it starts its second season.
Yeah, it's an exciting new way of doing show.
Well, speaking of things that are always better than the last, let's check our Priority One messages, Ben.
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Andy Kay. It is for Adam and Ben and James Trickey, who used to work at Product Madness. and introduced me to this podcast. There's no T at the end there because I think they ran out of characters.
He could have just stuck with pod, you know? Like, we've really put that out there.
Message goes like this, Ben. Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Thanks for all the pods every Monday at 8 a.m. UK time. I'm standing at my front door waiting for the latest episode to download so I can listen to on the way to work. You guys rock. Please, can you ask Kevin Uxbridge to say thank you to my friend and former coworker, James Tricky, for introducing me to this pod?
James, what you've done for me is something I can never fully repay because I've never had any money of my own. One of the horrible secrets about my real doll business is that I've shipped every single model I have on consignment. To be honest, they have not sold well via the intermediaries and middlemen that I contracted with.
You see, well, I have the powers to exterminate an entire race. My powers fail in the area of marketing.
You'd be ashamed to see the season 3 episode of Dragon's Den where I appeared pitching my business and was laughed out of the room because I had no numbers to lean on. No customers, to be honest.
And let me strongly discourage you from staying up late watching local cable channels. Because the commercial that I filmed with that college student did not turn out well.
I'm embarrassed that I attempted to produce a commercial by posting on Craigslist in the first place. That is partly on me.
Actually, now that I think about it, Craigslist is exactly where I should be selling these dolls.
I don't know why I tried to be a wholesaler in the first place. I should sell direct to the customer.
I digress.
Anyways, thank you so much for putting us in front of so many new people.
Well, Kevin, you've made a great case for your product, and you've done a hell of a job in thanking our friend James Tricky.
It's like Kevin is like a craftsman, but he sucks at the sales part of the job. It's almost like that's a whole different skill.
Like so many artists, he's concentrating on the craft. I understand that.
I feel like that's why my film production business basically collapsed.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that my film production business collapsed because I spent too much time day drinking and recording a podcast.
There's a second message. It's from Susie, who I believe we met at our first live show in Seattle.
Whoa.
I may be mistaken.
We go way back then.
Yeah. And this message is for Leaf and Danny. It goes like this. Remember how much fun we had drinking with Gowron on the Star Trek cruise this year? It sure was a blast when he put that triple down in his pants. Thanks for still being my pals, going on adventures with me, and drinking all those drinks. Too bad others couldn't join us. Also, Danny, you still have that crush on Adam after 190 episodes? Oh, damn. Whoa.
Much like my favorite kind of beer, Ben, I am very crushable. I wonder if they ran into our friend Ann Kilzer on that cruise.
I think
that would have been cool.
I am not positive about the timeline, but I'm thinking it may be two different cruises that we're talking about, because Ann Kilzer went on the very recent one. I think they're talking about the previous cruise.
I feel like Ann would have told us about a tribble in the pants of a Gowron.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll probably be coming back through Seattle on the 2018 tour, right?
That's the idea.
So maybe you can meet Danny, who has a crush on you.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll sign whatever Danny would like me to sign. How's that?
You better talk that over with your wife, Adam.
All right, that's fair. Well, if you have a message that you don't need to talk over with your wife before sending, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages like these cost $100, and commercial messages like some other real great ventures cost $200. They're a great, great way to support the ongoing production of this program and keep us waist deep in the alcohol required to produce it. So thanks.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
There's like the truest Shimoda is the oblivious in the face of danger Shimoda, right? Mm-hmm. That's what Shimoda was.
Yeah.
Stacking those chips.
Sure.
So to me, it's Odo.
Ooh.
Odo two times in this episode. The first time when he spots that graffito on the wall.
Yeah.
And he mentions that, like, look, you guys, this is not a big deal. This is in a low security area of the station. I don't think there's anything to worry about here. And Cisco's like, what the fuck, man? Starting now, there are no low security areas of the station. And that makes a ton of sense to me, Ben. Why is there such a thing here? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And this ties totally into the second reason for Shimoda, which is there are no cameras on the promenade outside of Quark's bar to see the Jabberwockies run out there after branding him. Like, you have people putting up Nest cameras all over their homes at this moment.
Yeah.
And in the 24th century, you don't have as much as one security camera inside or outside of Quark's bar. I think that's ridiculous.
If Riker can catch up on an episode of the show in order to be ready for the next part of the episode that he is in.
Exactly. That should be a technology here. And because Odo is so oblivious in the face of these, you know, fairly easy to solve dangers, like it would cost him $200 to solve this problem.
Yeah.
He is my drunk Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is, I think it's the same guard that we get the extended conversation with when it is prostitute proposition time.
Mm-hmm.
But, it is the Cardassian guard that we first see when we, like, reveal the camp. Because this guy, like, you know, like, there's a Bajoran that's, like, collecting rocks and putting them in a basket, and he gets rifle-butted. And then this Cardassian just struts off, and he is, like, I guess he's, like, walking down a hill, but the way he's strutting is just, like, boom, ba, doom, boom, 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 boom. I'm a Cardassian guard. Boom, 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 boom. I am so tough. And I just laughed. It's like a very extended shot, and his walk doesn't get less silly as it goes on. And I just laughed.
He never
and
breaks
laughed.
Character.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. Gotta get that, cold press that. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Get that gold press lock. Get that gold press lock.
Well, what do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The Amazon website has it thusly. The next episode is Season 2, Episode 2, The Circle, Part 2. Kira risks her life and war with the Cardassians to rescue a mythical Bajoran hero from a distant prison colony, which is the exact same... the exact same episode capsule as Amazon has for The Homecoming, which is the episode we just watched. However, not to be outdone with bad episode capsule, Netflix has it as, after Minister Jarrow dismisses Major Kira and sends her back to Bajor, Sisko angrily confronts him about his actions. So, the thing I've noticed about the Netflix ones is that they are written by somebody who clearly watched the cold open of the episode.
Yeah, that's the best. That's why they're so funny.
Yeah.
I'm definitely on Team Netflix Capsule going forward, dude. I think they are unintentionally funny.
I think reading both is the only way to reveal the funny.
All right. Fair enough.
At least for me, because I don't remember the series that well. You know.
Well, I think the thing we do at the end of every episode now is to break out our board game.
Yeah.
And roll our six-sided die to see where we end up next.
So you head to gach.biz/game.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
And we're going to generate a random number between 1 and 6 because we are rolling a virtual die. And the number is 5.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
So that'll be spot 7, which is a clear space on the board, unadulterated by some crazy mechanic that we or our listeners came up with ahead of time. So that'll be a regular-ass episode next week, but hopefully it'll be a lot of fun because it'll be the middle of an arc, you know? Your Empire Strikes Back is always the best episode in your trilogy, right?
Try to think of a bell curve and all the good that bell curves do. That's the best part in the middle of that bell, right?
Yeah.
That's what's coming up next time.
That's the good shit.
The good shit don't stop over on Facebook, Reddit, and Twitter, Ben. Conversations aplenty about every episode. Jokes dissected surgically.
Yeah.
Vivisected even, and then put in little jars of formaldehyde for study.
Totally.
That's how tight this game is.
It's that tight. There's also a Wikia page, Greatest Gen Wikia page, where people keep track of all the silly dumb shit we say on the show. It's a great resource if you're not clear on something we said and like what its origin may have been in the series. It's a really cool thing, and If you like the show, you can go to your favorite podcast app and rate and review us. Give us a nice review, and that really helps.
Yeah, that's the shit right there.
That's that shit. Check out our other show, Friendly Fire, on MaximumFun.org. Oh, and also, I wanted to give a shout-out to my buddies Sean and Steve, who I used to make a show. I had a brief job professionally podcasting for this website, Made Man. And Sean and Steve were also working there at the time. And since then, they've started their own show. It's called Six Pack. And it's a great podcast where they drink a six-pack of beer and talk about six topics. And I've listened to the last several episodes, and I've really enjoyed myself. And I say anybody that listens to this might enjoy that, so go give it a try.
These people weren't the ones responsible for your firing there, right?
No. No, they one of them was also a victim of that firing because a whole bunch of us got let go all at once. And the other had nothing to do with it.
Wow. Good job by them. I'm glad they landed on their feet and are making good pod.
Yeah. We should head out, Adam.
We'll see you next time on another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine as we bring you another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is the sober second part in a three-part series.
I'm not going to be that sober, okay?
Clearly not. Even if we recorded tomorrow, I don't know if you would be.
By the way, Reddit/r/popping used to be a great sub and is now like all burns and boils. It sucks. It's like people with blisters taking pictures of them.
I can't believe you actually go there.
All it used to be was a nice like gif of a blackhead going, you know?
Ben, I use r/popping as a punchline. I don't actually go there. You know you don't actually have to go to the things you make jokes about, right? Oh my God, Ben, all this time.
Yeah.
You've been fucking things with baseball bats.
Yeah, yeah.
Do not fuck Bokai at home, is what I would tell all of our viewers.
No.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.